UNICEF defines child marriage as any formal marriage or informal union between a child under the age of 18 and an adult or another child. Beyond being a human rights issue, getting married before adulthood significantly increases a girl's chance of domestic violence, dropping out of school, and poverty. Thankfully, there's been progress towards ending child marriage. That's one of the UN's Sustainable Development Goals. According to the latest UNICEF data, about 1 in 5 young women aged 20 to 24 were married as children. This represents a 5% decrease from a decade ago. A big part of that reduction is because of efforts in India, which has more child brides than any other country. India accounts for 1/3 of child brides in the world. But the prevalence of child marriage there is declining. It's currently down about 7% in the last 8 years. So what is India doing right? And what are the most effective ways to decrease child marriage globally? I'm Rena Ninen, and on today's episode of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, a production of Foreign Policy, we'll hear how India has been able to reduce its child marriage rates and what's being done to empower young women. But first, we're going to revisit a conversation I had in Season 2 with Mabel von Oranje, the founder of the NGO Girls Not Brides and the global movement Vow for Girls. She shared lessons from her decades in the field and how to end child marriage around the world. Mabel, such a pleasure to have you here today. There are so many issues that you could choose to focus on. Why do you choose to focus on child marriage?
I remember about 12 years ago, kind of learning about child marriage. And then, I mean, the words say it all, child and marriage. Girls under the age of 18, mostly girls, sometimes boys getting married. But I had no clue how big the problem is. 12 million girls every year. That's a girl every 3 seconds. One girl, another one, and it goes on and on and on. But it's not just an enormous problem, but it's also having huge consequences for the lives of these girls. Their bodies are not ready for pregnancy yet, so they're much more likely to have complications when they get pregnant. They're normally pulled out of school. They're more likely to become the victims of violence. And so it's an enormous problem, and it is having enormous consequences. When I learned about child marriage, I realized almost nobody in the world was paying attention or working on it. These 12 million girls were invisible. And so when I learned about it, I figured I can't sit still. I have to do something.
You are really in the forefront of this and considered one of the experts on child marriage. You've spent so much time and energy. From a Western perspective, this sounds like a no-brainer. Why would anybody do it? You laid it out for us. How do you explain why parents allow their children, their girls, to get married at such a young age like this?
Every parent wants the best for their children. And so I don't think parents do this because they want to hurt their daughters. And so it's often either because the circumstances are such that actually marrying off your daughters at a young age seems to be the best option because there are no better alternatives. Or because sometimes it's driven by tradition. People do it because it's been done generation after generation and they don't know any better. Sometimes it's done because there aren't alternatives, like there aren't schools for girls. Sometimes it is because parents are worried about the sexual safety of the girls. Imagine that she would get sexually active and pregnant before she's married. That might either dishonor her or it might dishonor the family. Sometimes it has to do with economic reasons. The fact that if you marry your daughter off, you have one less mouth to feed. Or in a place like India, where there's a dowry payment involved, the younger the girl is, the less high the dowry is. And so for poor parents, there is pressure to marry your daughter at a young age. It is always related to gender inequality. That idea that a girl is worth less than a boy. And I've heard it so often, parents saying, girls are a burden. You need to get rid of them as quickly as you can.
So Mabel, what do you think are real solutions that can help to prevent or end child marriage?
Over the last couple of years, we've learned a lot about what works effectively to end child marriage. And the most important thing we know is that if you want to end child marriage, yes, having national policies can be useful. Having UN resolutions can be useful. But that doesn't in the end affect what happens in the lives of girls. Take, for example, India, which has the biggest number of child brides in the world. They've had a law prohibiting child marriage for more than 100 years. And so if you want to end child marriage, you really need to work in the lives of the girls and their families and their communities. You need people who understand the community and who understand why child marriage happens. You need to empower them to work them with the people who can be the change makers. So in some communities, that means you do projects to empower the girls and help them realize that they actually have rights and that child marriage, you know, is not a normal path. In some communities, it means making sure that there's secondary education available and that the parents can actually pay for, let's say, the school uniforms or the school books. In some communities, it means sensitizing the parents or the religious or the local traditional leaders and help them understand that what seems to be the right thing to do is actually something harmful, not just for the girl, but it keeps the whole community stuck in poverty. In some cases, it requires providing cash transfers that encourage families to keep their girls in school rather than taking them out for marriage.
So you pay money to keep them in school?
Exactly. You keep money to keep them in school or make it possible for the parents to be able to feed their daughters. And so you really need localized solutions and you need to empower the people who understand why it's happening, who has the power to change it and how it should be changed. Make them do it.
What gives you the most hope that there can be significant progress and quickly?
I've seen so many communities where 10 years ago, child marriage was the most normal thing in the world, and they have decided to no longer marry their girls at a young age. And that feels like something that can easily spread all over the world. And that makes me hopeful because I know that a world without child marriage will be a world where not just girls and women, but also boys and men will be better educated, healthier, more prosperous, and more equal. I think we should make sure that girls can be girls and not brides.
Mabel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rina. It was a real pleasure speaking with you again.
One place that's made great strides in preventing child marriage is India. After the break, we'll travel to India and learn about a girl-led program that's helping girls break through cultural barriers, one family at a time.
Let's face it, money is the one subject we all need to deal with, but no one actually wants to talk about. The good news is there's a podcast helping you learn everything about money no one taught you. Meet Everyone's Talkin' Money, hosted by me, Shauna Game. Everyone's Talkin' Money focuses on relevant, inclusive, and forward-thinking conversations around money and just helps you get in a better relationship with your money no matter what your goals are. Do yourself a favor and subscribe to Everyone's Talkin' Money podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, a podcast from Foreign Policy. I'm Rena Ninen. Before the break, Mabel von Aranya, founder of Girls Not Brides, stressed how important it was to have local programs to prevent child marriage. She stressed that in many ways, this was more important than legally banning child marriage. This leads us to our next story from India-based reporter Ayushi Shah.
A typical dry, sunny morning paints the landscape in golden strokes as I navigate the dusty roads to Tondar village. It is located in the west of India. Most people here are farmers, and severe droughts, like clockwork, grip the village once every few years, plunging families into debt. It is 10 a.m. by the time we finally reach the village. The village livens up with the distant sounds of cows and the occasional laughter of children playing. The idyllic scene belies a sad truth about this area. This part of India, like many, is plagued by child marriage. Child marriage, which is defined as any marriage under the age of 18 for women and 21 for men, is illegal in India. Adolescent girls can go to the police or call up the children's helpline to report their marriage. But it isn't that simple. Most girls do not want to go to the police or report their parents. They do not want to bring shame to their families or push their parents into legal trouble. This is why the Indian NGO Child Rights and You, or CRY as it's known, set up one of their Kishori chapters here. The word Kishori is a Hindi word that translates to adolescent girls. And across India, This NGO supports almost 4,000 such groups. CRY supports more than 3 million children nationally. This particular chapter in Tondar has partnered with the local NGO, Kalapandri Sanstha. These two NGOs have been working in tandem in remote villages in the region for the last 25 years. The center is run by a woman named Sushma Tondare. She's wearing a blue flower-printed sari, her hair neatly tied in a bun. In her 30s, her warm smile radiates kindness. A big bindi adorns her forehead, a nod to tradition. Sushma is a local villager turned social worker employed by the non-profit. In her role as a supervisor, part of her job is to help the Kishori girls create structure in their discussions. Sushma's extensive connections within the local community make her a trusted figure. Almost everyone here addresses her affectionately as either ma'am or tai, which means elder sister. As we walk, Sushma introduces me to a young woman with an extraordinary story. To protect her privacy, we're calling her Sunita. Sunita was initially drawn to the center when it first opened up, and she loved to sing and dance and interact with other teenagers at the center. But all that changed one Saturday morning, 2 years ago. Sushma was leading a discussion with a group of young women.
Sunita walks in. She looked emotional, but she was silent throughout when she came to the center. I asked her what happened.
There had been a death in the family. Sunita's grandmother had passed away. Even now, 2 years later, Sunita gets emotional talking about it.
When my grandmother was in the hospital, she was not here. She was in Geral, a village.
Sunita shared an incredibly strong bond with her grandmother, and her passing broke her. The death could not have come at a worse time for Sunita. She was in the 10th grade, a pivotal year for Indian students, since this is when they take something called the board exam. It's kind of like the SATs in the US, but even more critical, since the score in this exam determines not only what college a student can get into, but also their whole career trajectory. A lot rides on doing well, and 10th graders spend much of the year preparing for it. As if dealing with grief, while also having the pressure to study for a life-defining test wasn't enough, Sunita was now faced with a new weight on her shoulders. This one came from her family.
Sunita told me it had only been a month and a week since her grandma passed away. And now they were talking about getting her married.
As Sunita explained, the death of her grandmother had been the catalyst.
There is a societal rule here. If your grandmother passes away, then the elder son or daughter has to get married within a year. Otherwise, they cannot get married for another 3 years. That is how the conversation started at our place.
Her elder brother was 16 years old and she was just 14 years old. In rural India, societal norms dictate every aspect of an individual's life, more so than the law. In these patriarchal societies, sons are considered an asset. They wanted Sunita's brother to study, but were okay to get Sunita married. So the pressure began on Sunita to get married, even though she was still going through puberty. Sunita was devastated.
I wanted to study. I want to stand on my own feet. I did not want to get married.
Each day, the pressure kept building.
Relatives kept insisting I must get married. You know how it goes with relatives. They'd say, tie the knot within a year, or you will have to wait 3 years. My dad argued that even in 3 years, I wouldn't be of legally marriageable age. But the relatives persisted. How can she not get married?
What made the situation even harder was the fact that Sunita's own mother had not been a child bride and yet was now forcing Sunita to go through this tradition at the insistence of her relatives. Sunita felt trapped and alone.
Mom message, matlab.
I wasn't talking to my mother. I was very angry at her. She was listening to my relatives.
But there were adults who would listen. Those at the Kishori group. When Sunita told Sushma what was happening, Sushma sprung into action.
I had numerous conversations with Sunita's parents, at least 15 to 20 times. I'd meet her mom, emphasizing how Sunita aspired to pursue further studies and what her dreams are. I hoped that being from the same village, she'd heed my words. Unfortunately, her father had a different stance and he told me that I was meddling in their internal family matters.
There were times when I couldn't even be in the room. My father would discuss with ma'am and I intentionally stayed away. It was just too heartbreaking to overhear discussions about my marriage. Ma'am shared with him the realities post-marriage, how I was still young, my dreams, and the potential legal consequences.
Soon another plan was hatched. Sunita decided she would concentrate on trying to change her father's mind while Sushma worked on Sunita's mother. Sunita appealed to her father's emotional side, arguing that her prospects to be financially independent and to make her own living would be crushed if she were to get married at 14.
When a girl marries at such a young age, instead of studying and playing, she's thrust into managing all the household responsibilities, shouldering the duties of a wife and mother.
The conversations pressed on. And as part of this strategic plan, Sushma arranged for Kishori girls to hold gatherings at Sunita's place.
During a gathering at Sunita's house, the Kishori girls used a powerful metaphor involving a rose. They emphasized the importance of physical maturity, explaining how a rose must first sprout branches and leaves before it can bloom on the plant.
Through the metaphor, the teenage girls acknowledged that physical relations were inevitable after marriage. But according to a World Health Organization report, an adolescent girl's body is not ready for childbearing. And if she gets pregnant before that, which is often the case of young brides, her body will likely not sustain it well, affecting her health as well as the baby's. Those meetings began helping Sunita's mom see things from a different perspective, as she later told me over the phone.
The Kishori girl started coming home and asked me, "Why are you getting Sunita married at such a young age? This is not the right time. Our parents are encouraging us to study further. You should do that as well. Why are you pressuring her?" I felt encouraged to consider continuing her studies further. I thought she could stand on her own feet through her education.
In addition to the economic argument against child marriage, this group of teenage girls also pressed Sunita's mom on other issues. They told her about the physical, mental and emotional implications of marrying young.
Through ma'am as well, I understood that my girl is young. If I get her married now, she will have to have physical relations with her husband and could get pregnant. But the girl's body is not developed yet. If it is a C-section delivery and there are complications, she or her kid could get a handicap. She will face a lot of mental stress with her in-laws' expectations. I started to understand that she's very passionate about studies.
Sunita became hopeful that her parents might reconsider their decision to marry her off. And so, despite of all this trauma of losing her grandmother and the stress at home to get married, Sunita spent all day and night studying for her big 10th grade exam, the one that would determine her future.
I removed all of these thoughts from my mind and I only focused on studying.
Finally, 3 months later, it was the day of her 10th grade exam result.
The results were at 1 p.m. that day, but I woke up early that day because I was really excited to see my result. I freshened up and met Sushma ma'am at the center to see my result online on the computer. dad had also come with me to see the result.
Sunita logged in and clicked through to find her result. She took a deep breath and stared back at the computer monitor. But then her score flashed across the screen. 82.6%.
I was so happy to see the result. I hadn't thought I would score so well because there was a lot of pressure on me. But I brought Sushma ma'am home with me and told my mom and everyone what my result was. We all even had sweets and everyone congratulated me. It was a really happy day.
But as good as the celebrations felt, Sunita was still unsure about her future. Her parents had not changed their mind about getting her married. So Sushma ma'am and the Kishori girls kept up their campaign to convince Sunita's parents to allow her to pursue her studies further. Sunita now had evidence that her life didn't have to be one of subservience. She had the chance to make something of herself, if only they'd let her.
I was very stubborn and kept saying that I want to study further.
Sunita's father seemed open to the idea of letting her study, but he made it clear that it would be up to her mother to make the final decision. Her mother was getting the most pressure from the outside relatives. Sunita feared she would never change her mind. She watched as her friends started to prepare for college. Sunita tried to be happy for her friends, but it was so hard. She longed to join them. And then a few days later, Sunita's friends were having a casual conversation about college. Sunita's mom was present as well.
That day, my friends were talking about college admissions. What stream would they choose in college? Science, commerce, or arts? I wasn't engaged in the discussion because I thought my parents would not let me study further. But then my mom asked me, "What stream will you take?"
Sunita could not believe her ears. Her mother had finally changed her mind. All those interventions had finally paid off.
If she's educated, she won't need anyone's support and won't have to live on her husband's income and be dependent on him. She can get married anytime. If I got her married at a young age, and if something happened to her or her child, I would feel really bad that it happened because of me.
I was beyond elated to hear this.
Her father finally decided to call off talks about her wedding.
Once Sunita's parents changed their minds, they completely embraced her dreams of going to college and becoming independent. As for Sunita's relatives, who had been so insistent that they marry their daughter off early, Sushma says Sunita's father had something to say to them as well.
He called up the relatives and told them that we are stopping all talks of her marriage. She really wants to study and is very good at it. Her father firmly told them that if my daughter doesn't say she wants to get married, we will not even talk about her marriage.
Her mother is now also one of her biggest champions.
Hello, madam. Huh?
It is a father's dream to see her succeed. As parents, we will now do everything it takes and encourage her to study. Work hard on the farm and support her with whatever she wants to learn.
I cannot tell you how happy I am that I did not get married. If I had been married, I would not have felt like living life.
My last image of Sunita was back at the Kishori Center. She has risen to become a vice president there and now leads groups of other young girls who talk about their own family struggles and pressures of child marriage. They find hope and inspiration in her story. Sunita knows that her time with the Kishoris won't last long though. She's got big plans for the future.
I want to become a police sub-inspector, PSI. And for this, I will also join the National Cadet Corps. My dream is to study hard and be successful in life, to fulfill all my father's dreams. Because I did not get married, I can still study till today. This, for me, is the biggest happiness.
For The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, I'm Ayushi Shah.
Before we leave, some encouraging news from India. UNICEF reports that in the past few years, there's been a significant increase in investments in literacy, girls' education, and public campaigns around the illegality of child marriages. All this, paired with grassroots efforts, like the one you heard from Ayushi, have helped lower the rate of child marriage in India. Next week on the podcast, the fight for LGBTQ rights in Kenya. Threats to the community there not only have psychological costs, but also financial ones.
Kenya loses close to 3% of the GDP, annual GDP, every year due to these laws that criminalize LGBT people.
That episode next week. And that does it for today's show. The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women is a production of Foreign Policy and is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Roberta Buffett Institute for Global Affairs at Northwestern University. The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women is hosted by me, Rena Ninen. Laura Rosbrow-Tellum is our senior producer. Rob Sachs, our managing director. Nicholas Petrie-Mitchell provided production assistance, and Ayushi Shah contributed reporting for this episode. Special thanks to Tirza Sprigella, who provided the voiceover for Sunita. Our thanks to you, and we'll be back in your feed next week.